Okay, thank you for coming. This is according to unpublished paper joined with Sopayan and team. So we have very wide range of audience. So sometimes I explain very basic things and sometimes I go fast. So feel free to ask questions. So let's start from a little bit of background and motivation. So quantum matter people really care about classification of phase of matter. We have different orders. A lot of beautiful structure coming out of different quantum mechanical systems. That's kind of the things we care at the end of the day. For example, this is one example of these beautiful phase of matter. Toric code that my talk is about that. So it has topological order. So there is nothing really clear about this picture. It's just something in toric code. But generally, in quantum phases of matter, we have some Hamiltonian that has some parameter. We tune this parameter, we go from some phase to other phase. We have field theory, RG flow, framework of understanding things. But the question is, Hamiltonians or unitaries are not the only thing we have in quantum mechanics. We have more stuff to do in quantum mechanics. One of the things that we can do is measurement. So this is the famous Schrodinger's cat that we can kill it by measurement, but can we generate some phase of matter by doing this stuff? So measurements are mostly used for detecting properties of phase of matter. So I have a spin chain, I measure some stuff, I get some information, and according by this information, I can say what kind of orders or properties this phase has. But here we want to do something a bit different. So like we don't really want to do that, but in principle, it should be possible to look at the ice and make water out of it by doing some quantum measurement. So it can enrich the things that we can do in condensed matter. This question comes from another side as well. So quantum simulators are becoming better and better every day, and natural operations we have in quantum simulators are unitaries and some measurements, and then we can use the output of these measurements to apply some other unitaries. And from a given unit density matrix, we end up on other density matrix. So in principle, we can use these measurements to manipulate some order or stuff here. So that's the general goal that we have in this current research program. But more specifically in this talk, I'm gonna focus on a specific setup. So I have just on-site measurements, I have on-site unitaries, and I can use feedback for these unitaries, and I start from a resource state. But this resource state is kind of specific. It's 2D toric code. So you can just think of this setup again. So these are on-site measurements, on-site unitaries, and this state is this resource state is toric code. This is another simple way of showing the system. So I have some spins. These spins have some inner structure that we call it toric code phase. I do some on-site measurements. So by on-site measurement, I mean just I don't apply two body measurements on two spins. Or all unitaries apply just one spin, not two spins. And these are the feedback parts. So I do some measurements. I get some classical data. The spin is either up or down. It gives me a bit, and I can use this string bit to do some operation. So this setup is inspired by MBQC setup. So in measurement-based quantum computation, we start from a resource state. We do only on-site unitaries and on-site measurements. On-site unitaries condition on the result of measurement, which is the feedback part. And we start from a resource state. So that's why we are studying this setup. So specifically in this talk, I'm just going to focus on this question. What phases of matter, what kind of structures can emerge out of toric code subjected to this measurement setup? Okay, first let's start toric code. So toric code is a model that has some spin half on these dots, and they have some sort of interaction. They have two type of interaction. Either I have these are just Pauli Zs, by the way, and Pauli X. So either we have 4-point ZZZ interaction, or we have 4-point X interaction around this star structure. So the ground state of this model is something we call Torrico's ground state. There is another way to look at Torrico, which simplifies our calculations. His Parton is the construction. So in the Parton construction way, we assign 4 Myronoff fermions to each spin. So the only thing that you really need to know about Myronoff fermions is that each 2 Myronoff fermions anti-commute. So that's the algebra of Myronoff fermions. So for each spin, I assign 4 Myronoff fermions. And the ground state of Torrico is when I couple these 2 neighboring Myronoff fermions, and then at the end of the day, I project it to physical Liberty space. So I didn't really say what do I mean by physical Liberty space, but if you count the dimension of Myronoff fermion, the Hilbert space dimension, you will see it's kind of increased and it's higher than a spin model. So the way that we deal with the ground state is that I increase the Hilbert space. In the increased Hilbert space, this, the ground state is kind of simple. It's just free fermion state. And then I project the state to the physical Hilbert space. That's one of the things that we do engage field theories. But why Myronoff fermions? They sometimes simplify our life. For example, in this simple setup, so if I have a state that is specified by these 2 type of correlations between Myronoff fermions, like I and K are paired, J and L are paired, then I ask, what if I measure IJ together? What is the update? The update is that IJ become paired. That's kind of evident. And then on the rest of the system is just K and L who were adjacent to these 2 Myronoff become connected. So that's the connection rule. That's how I try to solve this model. So in the bigger physical Hilbert space, you can write Pauli operators in terms of these 2 Myronoff fermions operators. So X measurement that pairs 1 and 2 just becomes this way of pairing 4 Myronoff fermion. Y measurement is the cross type of pairing, and Z measurement is this pair. So let's see what happens when we subject Torrico to this type of measurements. So this is the initial state we start. It's the state of Torrico in this bigger Hilbert space. And then, so if you zoom in around one of the spins, you get 4 Myronoff fermion around and 4 Myronoff neighboring fermions. So by X measurement, these 2 pairing appears, and the adjacent one become paired. And again, in Y measurement, we have the crossing and the Z measurement in this way. So that's how I track the effect of measurements on Torrico's ground state. So, yeah.
Can you explain how, maybe I missed it, but you go from the box
to, yeah,
to the line.
To the line. So what do I mean by box is that measuring X in the bigger Hilbert space means you have to measure, it is this one, these 2 Myronoff fermions separately and these 2 Myronoff fermions separately. So box means you have to measure. But what is the update of measurement? So I have these 2 connections. By these 2 connections, I mean the 2 Myronoff fermions that are connected together form an operator. So you can construct the operator gamma L, gamma J. And this operator stabilizes the state. And that means like it's the eigen, the state is eigen vector of these 2 operators. But by measuring these 2 Myronoff fermions, the updated state should have this new Myronoff fermion link, right? Because so if you measure something, the new state should be the eigen vector of that measurement. So that's appeared by the measurement axiom in quantum mechanics. But how the connection appears, you can convince yourself by a stabilizer formalism. So if I want to, if you multiply these 2 state together, these 2 operator together, then they commute with this measurement. So there is no update in that part. So that's just the multiplication of these 3 lines. So that's kind of comes from a stabilizer formalism, but essentially, you can see this as a measurement rule.
So can I understand this as like creating an expectation?
It's a great question. It's not really like that. It's like you disentangle some spins. So it's like you also kind of change the geometry of toroidal. So it's not quite.
I would imagine this procedure kind of creates tensions in that formalism, but not that isn't necessarily.
So, there are two things. One time you are applying sigma x or sigma y as a unitary, then that thing excites your state.
Yeah.
But the other time you project the state on that. So it's not quite exciting.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. So the new state has this coupling as a stabilizer and these two-point operator as a stabilizer. So another interesting thing is that you start from a free fermion state. You have just two-point minor fermion. And again, because the measurements are kind of two-point, you always stay in this free fermion state. That's also something important to note.
So, but you told us that like we can understand this based on the stabilizer formalism, but like aren't the toroidal stabilizers involving like four, like z or like x measurements, for example? So like basically each of the measurements like does not involve any like stabilizer action. Each of the z or each of the x measurements. Like
only
after we do the four measurements, we have we complete the stabilizers.
We do one measurement here. Either we measure just x, y, or z. We don't measure four-point stabilizers, right? So there are just one-point polys. So I have toric code, then I only measure x somewhere, or I only measure y, or I only measure z.
Oh, so like this is
the mapping from Majorna to a spin is kind of hard to see here. Like you can't really map this to a spin, like by memory or anything. You have to just calculate, but. So I'm giving the update in the bigger Hilbert space now. But you can do the same procedure in the spin.
Also, IJKL belongs to the different spins, for example. Exactly.
Yeah, they are coming from different. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, they are coming from like total different.
I see. So the subscription like after IJKL corresponds to the spin that like this background output is.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the blue box is
what I want to measure now. And then that's the update.
So what was the meaning of that blue solid line?
So you're asking why I choose this coloring. So I generally try to keep black for close neighboring and other colors for other neighboring. So if like you have to, maybe later it becomes more clear. Like here. So you have these black connections that comes from the ground state. Then you measure this one, and the update connects these two neighboring, and then it generates a long one. So the convention black and blue are coming from the neighboring and the long ones. So at the end of the day, these are the three type of patterns that you get by these three measurements. This is one instance that we measure sigma y, sigma z, and sigma x here, and we introduce some correlation between this pole and this minor fermion and this minor fermion. And also we have these short ones that they are still unmeasured. So now we know how to deal with measurements, let's introduce one protocol and see what happens. So I introduce a random measurement protocol. So each spin I see, I randomly choose from poly x, y, z with these probabilities. I need just two parameters because they have to sum to one. And randomly I measure and I look at the final state. So this is like one instance of this random measurement. You get all these pairings. But this is a well-known model. It's a classical loop model that has these three type of pairings, and by tiling these three type, you can get all those loops. You can write a partition function and study the phase diagram of this model. So it has this phase diagram, so it has three different phases. So two of them are short loop, like if you look at the general instance of the loop model, you will see there are a lot of loops and short loops in these phases, in these probabilities. And there are much longer loops in the Goldstone phase. And there is a sharp phase transition that separates these phases. I later can explain why they call this Goldstone, but you can just call it long loop for a while. So we have to introduce some order parameter for this classical model, like the order parameter that we always introduce. So you can take two points in the loop model and see what is the connectivity of these two points. So in the short loop phase, this drops by distance very rapidly, exponentially rapidly. And in the long loop phase, it stays very correlated for a very long distance. Or you can introduce other type of order parameter. You can ask what is the average connectivity of the upper part and downer part for this classical loop model. In the short loop phase, it doesn't scale with system size. And in long loop phase, it scales logarithmically. Or the last one is that you just look at the connectivity of one boundary, and you ask how it scales with some ratio of the boundary. How one ratio of boundary, how the connectivity of one part of boundary to the other part scales with the system size. So in the short loop phase, you don't have a lot of connection from left to right. It doesn't scale with system size. But in the long loop phase, you get a lot of connection. For example, the blue one belongs to the long loop phase, and the gray ones, you can think of them as a short loop phase instance. Yes? Why I introduced minor fermions to study toroidal?
Why do you not study minor directly instead of talking about toroidal?
So you're asking like I prepare a free fermion state and then measure them? Yeah, it does kind of the same job, but I think first we are studying, so I think there is one subtlety that these two setups are different. So if you want to prefer just Majorana's here, this is not a physical state, right? If you say these four Majorana are spins, okay, so probably the setup would be this. You have three Majorana fermions, and then you measure different Majoranas, right? Like two-point Majoranas. There is no spin, there is no physical liberty space, right?
Yeah, the physical liberty space is not of spins.
Yeah, it's just fermions in that case.
Okay.
Yeah, but your measurements are also just two-point Majorana measurements between another Majoranas, right? Because I have some motivation to look at these measurements around sigma, around this spin, because they are sigma polys. But if you like it, look at the Majoranas, you're just measuring two random Majoranas. There is no motivation why you are measuring this pairing. Is that clear? Yeah.
Also, in the example of code, do you measurement and projection commute?
That's a great question. Measurements and projection commutes because of this. So actually, if you take this half part, say x is gamma 1, gamma 2, gamma 1, gamma 3, gamma 1, gamma 4, these measurements, they satisfy the algebra. But by adding the physical Hilbert space condition, or that projection, you get the second part. So that comes from that condition. This next part. So these four Majorana should be multiplied to 1. So if this is sigma x to the power 2 is 1, so this also should be sigma x. That comes from.
Oh, sorry if I missed this, but so when you are doing this measurement, you state this toy code in the ground state, and then you don't excite this toy state.
So in the ground state, what do you mean by ground state? Because we don't have new Hamiltonian. It's not this new state is not the eigenvector of previous Hamiltonian. So it's like, so what do you mean by stays in ground state?
So this is not the. So when you're performing the measurement, your state changes from the ground state to the non-eigenstate.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, like some superposition of eigenstate. Oh. Yeah. So.
When talking about phase, since that the setup is you do some random, then perhaps we
some sense of average to define.
So we're going to get there. Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's like five states after this. Yeah.
Sorry, this may be like, it's not very basic. I noticed that you have under and over crossings, but on the other side, you have the symmetric crossing.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter how they cross. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's just like a matter of drawing. but that could be another model. Yeah. So we get these phases. These are the order parameters. But this is related to one of the questions. But if I measure everything, I end up to product state. So it's not something interesting. So I have to leave some parts unmeasured. So this is one of the things I can do. I can leave this part unmeasured. And measure the rest. So you can, it's kind of simple to see. If you do not measure the upper part, you can move this myron around in the bulk and they connect some parts to the other part. So the connectivity becomes like entanglement. And the short loop phase is the area law entanglement, and the Goldstone phase becomes the logarithmic entanglement. So the averaging comes from the different type of measurement. So we can introduce also a spin order parameter rather than only entanglement scaling. So by introducing this spin order parameter, we get this phase diagram. So we have a spin glass order phase, this order phase, and a critical phase that separates these two phases. So on average, with this probability, when I measure z and y more, I get a spin glass on the boundary. If I increase the X frequency, I go to disorder, and for example, here I get a critical state that separates order and disorder. But we don't like nonlinear order parameters. This is nonlinear because of this factor, because we can't measure them in the lab. That's why we utilize feedback and unitary.
What's the
entanglement is logarithmic. Entanglement scaling is logarithmic with system size.
So the area law is like the interface of the entanglement. But here you're in like two spatial dimensions. So the entanglement cut should be something like a circle. You have the parameter or something. Right?
Yeah, that's a great point. So when you measure bulk, this becomes product set and disentangles from the boundary. I'm just looking at the boundary. Yeah. So boundary is logarithmic and area law. And this is the order parameter, but we want to introduce linear order parameter.
Question.
Yes.
So in the phase diagram, can you go to the phase
diagram? Okay. This one?
My example asks is, why do those two curves intersect exactly at one point?
Here in the half. Also, so you're looking for like a intuition from the classical model, right?
I mean, generally, they can intersect at two different points.
Yeah. So that comes from classical analysis. Yeah, that's a good question. So you're asking like why this point belongs to the like boundary of the phase, not from the critical phase inside, right?
Yeah.
So the critical phase could be a stable down. I think you can have that, actually. So if you change your setup a bit, like if you add, I can talk about that at the end, but if you change the statistical mechanical model a bit, then this becomes stable. And even in some ranges, it actually takes over all the space. It becomes totally logarithmic. Yeah, so that can happen. It's just in this special case, it didn't happen.
So one more question. So the measurement is conducted on the boundary of the system?
So measurement is conducted on the bulk, and we are looking at the boundary.
And
boundary has some order parameter. Now I'm going to do some on-site unitary on the boundary to make like a linear ordered phase that we always see in condensed. So we don't like nonlinear order parameter. We want to make linear order parameter. That's how we use feedback and unitary. So why we don't have, why we need nonlinear order parameter is that the output of measurements are random. So this Z correlation can be positive or negative with the same sign. This square root cancels that sign of measurements output. So by knowing the result of measurement, I can somehow manipulate different results to always go to the positive one. So if I have some ZZ with negative correlation, I apply some rotation on one of them and make it positive. But I don't want to explain really the details of the adaptive protocol. But it just needs some classical progress. It doesn't have any quantum mechanical progress. So if you have a classical agent that just, it's, that classical agent is only able to do some polynomial scaling algorithm. According to the results of boundary bulk, it can manipulate the boundary to get this order parameter. That's a linear order parameter that we have. So what about non-Pauli measurements? Because Pauli measurements are always kind of simple because of stabilizer formalism. But if you do non-Pauli measurements, you can show there is a mapping between this setup and a 1 plus 1 dimensional setup, that you start from a minor chain and you do some unitary on the chain. And the output of that is exactly maps to the boundary of this setup. So in that case, you can, so these kind of states are very well known and well studied, so we can try to import their result. And the result is that by changing the type of unitary circuit, the Goldstone phase is stable. So that's the only thing that is important from the non-Pauli measurement. So if you change your measurement protocol a bit, everything is stable. Nothing gonna die. So this is a summary of the talk. I showcase the potential of MBQC setup, which is on-site measurements, on-site unitaries, condition, and the result of measurement, to manipulate some phases and generate some phase of matter. For example, here we have spin-glass order, disorder, and some critical phase that separate them. So what comes next? Here we did some kind of random measurement, but you can do some supervised measurement, like find what type of measurement, introduce what type of Majorana correlations. And for example, you can engineer 1D cluster state. It's like example of SPT phases on the boundary by measuring Tori code in the bulk. Or you can generalize this setup to 3D version. So if you look at the 3D Venn's model, I have 6 Majorana fermions around each edge, and by measuring different Paulis, I get these kind of 3D loops, and I can make some correlation in 2D by engineering those measurements. There are other directions that we can take. I'm not really going to explain this, but so there are some properties of phases, like intrinsic sign, that can be related to this type of random measurement. We know if your measurement is not random, it has a fixed basis, MI is related to sign structure. But it's natural to conjecture that if you randomize the direction of measurement, it might be related to intrinsic sign structure. That's it.
So going back to the phase diagram, you have, so if I understood correctly, you do measure X measurements and Z measurements, which creates these strings like this and this.
Yeah.
But just from my naive expectation, they seem to be symmetric. So what you call on one side spin glass, the other side is this one.
Yeah, it's actually it's a good expectation. It's like, okay, maybe I think I can explain it here. So at the end I'm just looking at this Majorana fermion on the boundary. If you extremely measure sigma x and nothing else, it's gonna connect this Majorana fermion to this Majorana fermion, and everything is short loop. But if you only measure sigma z, it's gonna pair this Majorana fermion to the next Majorana fermion. So it just flips the sign. And that's ZZ correlation, but that's productive state. It's very similar to Kitaev chain.
And for example, if you have like same setup, same measurements, everything, but you look at the other hand, like the boundary of y.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So it's the fact that you're looking at boundary which makes something.
Yeah, exactly. So the fact that these are the physicalist spins and these are not physicalist spins breaks that symmetry. Otherwise, it's totally symmetric. Yeah.
Could you explain that? I should be talking about the boundary a little bit more. So it seems that you first have a 2+0 dimensional model. And you do some, then effectively translates that into a 1+1 dimensional statistical model, and then I view the boundary as, for example, some spatial dimension, and I do some entanglement cut to calculate the entanglement entropy. Is that the logic?
Yeah. But you can do more things. For example, I introduce different order parameters from the loop model. So you can, inspired by this setup, you can leave these two boundary unmeasured. And entanglement from lower part and the upper part becomes connectivity. Or you can leave two spin unmeasured, and the entanglement between them, or some correlations, is the order parameter from classical model. So why we left just one boundary, or why we are restricted in this kind of setup, just comes from the order parameters of classical model. So one other interesting thing you can do, and I know it doesn't work here, is that you can leave some two-dimensional like sparse spin and look at the connectivity of them. And it doesn't show anything in the phase diagram. So if you change the phase diagram, if you change the probability, that 2D like geometry doesn't see these phase transitions. So that's what we are restricted in 1D. But if you start from another model, it might show something in 2D.
So here, it seems that if I measure x or z, it kills large loops. Is that the intuition?
Just x and z, yeah. Our intuition is that y actually introduced large loop because y is mapped to, I guess it's here, sorry. Y is mapped to crossing. So if you have some loops, x and z are kind of makes everything nested, and they have they don't have that much space to go. But y measurement generates some, crossing, and then they have more space to go.
How you identify your order parameters like strictly from this
classical? So how ZZ comes to the, exactly. Kind of related to this answer. So if you go to the extreme z measurement, you get a coupling from here to here. And then by doing Jordan-Wigner, you will see it gets, or projecting to physical Hilbert space, it gives you zz correlation. So in the extreme point, we know we have zz order. So it's natural to guess that by going far from that point, it stays stable. And it stays stable, yeah. That's how we identify. Yeah.
You also mentioned doing this. I was wondering, maybe, what if we decorate the faces,
the strings, with these? There is one interesting about 3D. I think it's so. I think the first thing we have to do is that we have to go and see what is the phase diagram of 3D model. In 3D model, there is no logarithmic phase. It's real long range phase, and it's probably correspondent to volume law. So probably by 2D version, we can decorate some area law to volume law transitions. But the model is not very well understood, the classical model. So, yeah.
But that's crossing of lines, crossing surfaces.
But it's still the paths of Majorana's are still one dimensional. So it's still we are looking at the 1D object in 3D object.
Yeah. Would you be looking at like something similar like this, but like Walker-Wang, for example, surface operator? instances?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think we haven't think about it, but in principle, it should be possible. Yeah.
Let's continue the discussion over snacks. Then can the speaker continue? And before you leave, I just want to say a few things. First of all, please take 5 minutes to fill out the feedback form that I sent in the email. It'll be really useful for our speaker. The talk was great.
Thank you.
There's always room for improvement. The other thing I wanted to say, there are currently only 2 spots left to give a seminar this term for 2 weeks from today. So please go ahead and sign up if you're interested. After that is going to be the summer break. And last but not least, please consider chairing this next term. I'm happy to, when the time comes, help you, help teach you all the fascinating stuff that happens in the background that goes into organizing this. Okay, that's it. Thanks.